Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, the Vedas do describe the Supreme in their words, but of course, nobody can say everything about him. So, because of that, he's said to be undescribable. Now, okay, you had your question. Let's see the question again. Can we get the microphone?
His unlimitedness is described in terms of beginning from the sentence, middle of the translation.
Which one? 33?
33.
Okay.
Thus, his unlimitedness is to be understood both in terms of his identity, since unlimited universes wander within him, and in terms of qualities, since he is a shelter of all kinds of qualities contained in these universes.
Hmm.
There are such Shrutis stating that. Hmm. So, this universe is actually a limited thing, and how they are equating that unlimitedness to this universe, and...
I'm sorry, I missed the last sentence.
This universe is limited and it is an inferior 1/4 of his Lord's creation. And how this unlimitedness is equated with the universe, and also they are saying that the qualities of the universe, the kinds of qualities contained in these universes.
Okay.
So I thought unlimitedness means it refers to Krishna's qualities and his spiritual creation, which have no limit. But why it has to be something to do with the material universes and things like that?
Okay, let me think. Okay, it is true that ultimately the material universes are limited. Each universe is a finite size, and there are ultimately a finite number of universes. It's unlimited only figuratively. We do know that he contains within himself all of those universes and all the qualities of everything in those universes that we're accepting from Scripture. That means maybe he does have a limit. Maybe he's bigger than all the universes, but he's still not infinite. Theoretically, that could be possible. Right?
I didn't get it.
Well, sorry. I'll do it again. Okay, the universes are finite. There are only a finite number of universes. Each one is finite size. And they have a lot of qualities, but a finite number of qualities. We're being told that he contains all of that within himself.
Yeah.
You're questioning, how does that mean that he's infinite?
Yeah, yeah.
And yes, taking it, you know, picking it apart, yes, it only means that he's bigger than all the universes, whatever they are. The total of all the universes, add it all up, he's something more than that. That still doesn't mean necessarily that he's infinite. Okay, yes. Jiva Goswami says it though, so we have to make something out of what he says and accept it in some sense. At least, There's no limit you can assign to him. You can't say he's only this much. No limit within the scope of the material universe is there's no limit, because we know he's beyond that, beyond everything that's in all the universes. So you may say, theoretically, he could have a limit beyond that somewhere out there in his own self. It may only go so far. Maybe, but at least, if you want to be strict about it, we have to say that whatever limit you can identify in any material universe, he has to be, can't be limited by such a limit. If there's a limit, there would have to be some transcendental limit, not a material one. That's all I can say, because Jiva Goswami he's giving that argument. He's unlimited because he's greater than everything material. It may not work as strictly mathematical logic, but maybe that's all we can know. I mean, how can we understand how he's unlimited since we're limited? You know, so all we have is what the Vedas can tell us that we are capable of understanding, and that's maybe all we can. That's as far as we can understand. That at least he's bigger than everything in all the material universes. Okay, it's all I can come up with. Yes.
Where did we get this idea that all material, like universes, are limited, and material creation is also limited?
I'm sorry. All the material universes are what?
Limited and
limited.
All material creation is limited. Do you have any references like right now to go with it? Because it looks like that Shri Goswami uses Anantanam, Brahmantanam.
I think only because I thought I heard that from Prabhupada, but scripturally, where is it said that there's a finite number of material universes? You're asking that question. I don't know. Yes?
Creation. One-fourth of the creation is ekapad vibhuti, tripad vibhuti.
One-fourth of everything, but everything is infinite. So what's one-quarter? What's one-quarter of infinity? If it's literally 25% of infinity, then it's also infinity.
Actually, the reason...
My understanding, which may be wrong, is that it's a finite corner. You know, there's four quadrants. One of them is finite, the other three are infinite. So the material, my understanding was, but I can't say that that's exactly what scripture says. I'm just trying, my understanding of it is that the material existence is finite. But you're questioning where is that said, and I can't tell you. That's, you know, I'm just still guessing on that. Don't we have some statements in Chaitanya Charitamrita about that one way or the other? And in Brahma Samhita?
I think it was said there that it's an unlimited number of universes, unlimited number of Brahmas and Indras and so on. Especially in this discussion when Lord Brahma, he came to the to see Lord Narayana, and then he called all these Brahmas, and then it was said that unlimited number of Brahmas. So.
Right. The only thing is, and he does say that here, Anantanam. Jiva Swami is using the word Ananta. The word Ananta could sometimes be used figuratively. Right? It could be used in some context to mean so big, you know, such a big number we can't count it. So the answer to the question rests on whether Ananta, the way that Jiva Goswami uses it here, when he says there are countless universes, is that to be taken literally or just figurative? Figuratively, that's still unanswered.
In this relation, Prabhupada writes in Easy Journey to Other Planets that the Vaikunthas are spiritual planets which are manifestations of internal potency of the Lord,
yes,
and the ratio of these planets to the material planets is 3:1.
Right, but that goes back to the Upanishad that talks about the tree Ekapad Vibhuti and the tree Pad Vibhuti. Sorry, the relation, what is it, 3:1?
The ratio of the spiritual planets to material planets is 3:1.
Well, that's that same 1/4 against 3/4. You know, 3/4 is 3 times bigger than 1/4. This is just, again, repeating what was originally said in one of the Upanishads, that there is an Ekapad Vibhuti and a Tripad Vibhuti. 3/4 opulence is spiritual existence, and 1/4 opulence is material existence. But again, it could be taken two ways, that 1/4 is a finite 1/4, or it's an infinite 1/4. Mathematically, it can be either way. You can have, take a plane, a two-dimensional space, and cut it up by drawing two, you know, making 4 quadrants. You can do it, if it's an infinite plane, you can still define 1 finite quadrant in 1 corner, and the other 3 infinite. So mathematically, it's possible that 1/4 is actually a finite quarter, and the 3/4 are infinite. I tended to take it that way, but I don't have proof that that's the interpretation, that the 1/4 isn't also infinite. I don't remember any scriptural statement that definitely says that. That the material, if you can dig one up for me, tell me, you know, show me where it says that the material universes are actually infinite.
There's a normal.
I mean, literally, you know, to be taken literally, infinite.
Normal means common terminology they use for the Lord. Ananta Koti Brahmandir Malik. Like that.
Yeah. But again, is that word ananta meant to be taken literally? Yeah.
I think it's very important to understand. What does Jiva Goswami imply by saying Ananta Brahmanda? Because if he says that there are Ananta only figuratively, it means that
Ananta
supreme
what?
Brahmandas universes.
Previous?
Figuratively. If he take that Ananta means only figuratively, not
yeah, but then it's not a proof.
Yeah.
That he contains something finite that's not really infinite,
doesn't
prove that he's infinite.
Yeah.
But if the material creation is infinite and he contains it, then he's infinite.
So that's the point, that all Chirji Goswami argument is based that material universe that should be unlimited. Otherwise, it doesn't prove that the Supreme Lord is unlimited.
Okay, great. So why don't we just for now assume that there are unlimited universes, and then it solves everything, if that's true. Okay.
Verse 32. Rigveda quoted 10.129, 6-7.
Rigveda. Okay, yeah.
Songa Veda, Yadina Veda, that one.
Wait, how does it begin?
In this world, who actually.
No, the Sanskrit?
Iyam.
Iyam?
Iyam, it begins with Iyam. The second verse begins with Iyam.
Are you in 33? No, I see you at the end of 32. Okay.
Yeah.
From the Big Veda, yes.
And in the translation of these verses, you have mentioned perhaps he. I think it is whom from. Is who from?
I'm sorry?
He. Whom from or who from? It is written here.
Well, it's backwards. From whom?
Okay.
He who from. I'm sorry, it's bad English. It actually should be whom.
Yeah.
He from whom.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's easy to fix.
Okay. And I have a question in this.
Yeah.
How come we are saying here that. First question, I didn't understand intentionally. And second is, how come Krishna doesn't know his own creation? That seems like refers to his material creation.
I'm looking at it. Yes. Well, here the Rig Veda actually is talking in speculative terms. The Rig Veda knows more than it's revealing here. It's talking as if it was a person who didn't know the Supreme Person and is just speculating about the Supreme. So it's from a different, it's from a lower point of view of somebody who doesn't know. So maybe it's a little unfair to quote it, but Jiva Goswami quoted it. You know, it's the Rig Veda, but the Rig Veda pretending to know less than it actually does. And saying, I don't, you know, who knows if the Supreme even knows his own, you know, extent of his potencies. A devotee will say, of course he knows his extent of it, at least he knows his material creation, because it's finite. But the speculator speaking here doesn't know. And he's wondering whether the Supreme even knows that. But then, if that's so, then it's not really proof that he doesn't know it.
Taking this to be the material...
You know, this is it's a little confusing here. It's a little confusing to see how this is solid evidence that the Supreme doesn't even know the extent of his glories.
Yeah.
Because this is the Rig Veda talking as if it didn't really know the Supreme.
Yeah.
Hard to figure this out, because what are we going to use for understanding the purport of the Rig Veda? We don't have a Vaishnava commentary in the Rig Veda. Not in this part of it. We have to speculate what it means.
I mean, this point is given to prove that Lord's qualities are unlimited, that's why we can't describe him. Basically, this is supports that point correctly.
Well, not only that they're unlimited, but not only, you see, we're in 32. We're looking at the verse where it says that the lords of heaven don't know your limit.
Yeah.
And then Jiva Goswami makes the point that Atmanom Tam Nayasi, even you don't know your own limit, is what Jiva Goswami says.
Yeah.
And then he quotes, he quotes at the end of the paragraph that verse on the Rig Veda to point out, to show some evidence for his point that even he doesn't know his own limit, what to speak of the lords of heaven.
I mean, the whole point is to prove that why we cannot describe the absolute truth. Because the whole point is to prove that why the absolute truth cannot be described, because it's limited.
Why? I'm sorry.
The absolute truth cannot be described. That is the.
Not here. Topic here is understanding what the. Personified Veda is saying in this verse, Diyupataya Eva. What they're talking about here is the unlimitedness of the Lord. The unlimitedness was given as a reason why he can't, you know, he's unknowable. He can't be known completely because he's unlimited. That was said before in the previous paragraph.
Yeah.
So now this prayer comes up, which describes how he's unlimited.
Yeah, yeah.
So the focus here is understanding the way in which he's unlimited.
Okay.
And he's unlimited because, you know, evidence that he's unlimited, that the lords of heaven, the most intelligent people in the universe, can't find any limit to him, and he can't find one either.
Okay.
Is what Jiva Goswami adds.
Okay.
Yes. But we hear that also somewhere in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That Krishna, because Krishna's opulences, his sweetness is always expanding.
Yeah, yeah.
Therefore, he isn't aware of all of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it is always something being added.
Yeah.
So, although the Rig Veda verse is apparently talking about the material creation, we can make proper sense out of it by applying it to Krishna's spiritual nature. That he doesn't, Krishna may, of course, knows his material creation, but the spiritual creation doesn't have any limit and it's always expanding. So, so it is said somewhere that Krishna doesn't even know the limit of his own spiritual opulence.
Yeah.
So maybe the proper way ultimately to interpret the Rig Veda verse is that indirectly it's actually referring to Krishna's spiritual
yeah.
creation.
It's difficult to understand because in one, in the translation of this 32, it was this sentence. You says the ruler of this world, living in the spiritual supreme sky, may know.
The rulers of the what?
The ruler of this world, living in the.
Where is that?
It's a Rig Veda quotation. It's translation which you give. Which you give.
Rig Veda.
Yeah.
32. Hold on.
Same quotation.
Indeed, the ruler of this world living in the supreme sky. Yeah, asya adyaksha parame vyoma. So it's the lord of this material world, but he's living in the spiritual sky. That's Lord Vishnu.
Yeah, but it is said vidato na vida. So, and you translate that may know this, or he may know it. So
right,
this,
that's what the Rig Veda is saying.
Yeah. So this, shall we imply that this material world, or it can be also something, because it's not mentioned directly,
well,
Veda or not Veda?
Hare Krishna, let's see, Veda, what is the object of Veda? Know what? Let's look at that whole Rig Veda verse. Well, the question is, what's the origin of this creation? We assume Vishrishti means material creation. Okay, the word, I'm looking at the two verses, the actual two verses, not just the last couplet, but the two verses that are in the commentary, two verses in the Rig Veda. What they're asking about in the first verse is who knows, from whom, who can describe him from whom this creation was born? So what nobody knows is the creator. And then it said he may know or may not know. It doesn't say he may or may not know the creation. He may or may not know himself. Now, he may not know himself completely, because that includes his ever-expanding spiritual opulences. So he knows the material creation. That's no problem, but that's not what's being said here. The question is, who knows him from whom which everything comes? So that the Lord himself of this universe doesn't know himself, or maybe he doesn't know himself, is what it said, and that's fine. The Supreme Lord from whom everything comes, who knows him? Well, maybe he even doesn't know himself.
So I think if it's so, we have to correct the translation or to make some comment.
I see his translation is wrong. He may know his own creation. Okay, so I change it. He may know himself, or he may not. Okay, sorry. Does that fix it?
Yeah, that changed.
Perfect.
His own creation to himself.
Yeah.
Okay, it took a little puzzling to figure that out, but that's the fix.
No, so we should fix it up in the original verse translation.
Where?
Up there. Same quotation.
Because it's out of context, we didn't specify the object in the translation. We just said it says in the translation, indeed the ruler of this world living in the spiritual sky may know this, or he may not. It doesn't specify what this is.
Maybe you can just chop up this. He may know or may not.
Okay, fine. It's chopped off. Could you see? Yeah. All right, I think we solved that problem. What other problems? Okay. Now we can move on. 34. Yes.
Of no need, the Rig Vedas are kind of not revealing the whole thing is not applicable here. That
yeah, we don't have that problem.
Okay. Yeah.
We don't have. We can take what they're saying literally.
Okay.
It just say, they're just saying maybe he doesn't know himself.
Yeah.
Which is okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, now we're drawing a conclusion. Because the Vedas do describe the Lord, although neither they or anybody can say everything about him, therefore, we draw our conclusion. He, yasmad evamatat, shrutayas twayi palanti. Indeed, because this is so, the shrutis bear their fruit in you. What does that mean? Because that's what the last word of the last prayer is, the last line is, the shrutis bear their fruit in you. What does that mean? Jiva Goswami says here, katanchid kinchid evodishya punar anantatva katanenaiva twayi pariyavasyanti. The Vedas refer to you ultimately. First, somehow indicating something about you, and then saying simply that you are unlimited. So that's a sort of explanation of why he said that he's described as undescribable. The Vedas say a lot of things about him, and then they say, well, ultimately, he's undescribable. Because we can only say so much, and that's it. So ultimately, he's indescribable. Atat shutav api prajapatyanandatat shata gunanandatvam abhidaya punu punaha yato vacha nivartante ityadina anantatvena vagatita sankhyanandatvam brahmana uktam. In the this is in the Taittiriya Upanishad. There's an analysis of different degrees of ananda. The ananda of ordinary human beings multiplied 10 times is equal to the ananda of the Prajapatis. And then their ananda multiplied by 10 times is equal to someone else's and someone else's. And finally you get at the end to the ananda of Brahma. Thus, in Shruti, after declaring that the ecstasy of Brahman is 100 times greater than the ecstasy of the Prajapatis. Now, if that was literal, that would mean that the ecstasy of Brahman is finite. It's just 100 times Prajapati ananda. But after that, the same Taittiriya Upanishad then says something else. Yato vacho nivartante. Words can't describe. Give up trying to describe him. By that, it's said, it's stated by the words beginning, from which words desist, that since Brahman is unlimited, the quantification of his ecstasy is beyond the power of speech. So it's said, okay, his ecstasy is 100 times the ecstasy of the Prajapatis. But then it's said, not really, words cannot say everything about his ecstasy. So it's beyond the power of speech. We can't give a number to it. Actually, it's infinite. Yato vacho nivartante, as we said yesterday, doesn't really mean that words can't say anything about him. It's that they say so many things and they finally give up. They just get tired. They can't say anymore. Yaruktam natad idrik iti gyeyam navachyam nachatarkyate pashyanto pi najananti medo rupam vipaschita. This is, we don't know where this comes from. Maybe we can dig it up, but we don't know. As it is said, the Supreme cannot be understood as being like this. It cannot be described, and it cannot be conjectured. Even wise men who are looking for it cannot know the form of Mount Meru. Okay. Thus, it is here being said that he is describable only as being indescribable. Ato atra anirdesha twainaiva nirdesha twam. Okay. Let's see the commentary. The Taittiriya Upanishad does not present the Supreme as impersonal, but as a person experiencing pleasure. Greater pleasure than experienced by the demigods, sages, and everyone else. Only after using its words to describe that pleasure of the Supreme does the Upanishad then say that words cannot describe him. This can only mean that unenlightened words can say nothing about him, and that no words can say everything about him. Okay. Comments? Yeah.
Is this the second reason which was said in 32?
What was the first reason?
First was that he
unlimited.
Yeah, he's unlimited, and then second was that we cannot say he's like this. Yeah, itham puta. And then in this in this quotation we have this natat itrik itigeyam.
Yeah, but the two of them are tied together. You can't say he's like this or that because he's unlimited. It's just it's the first, second reason is based on the first. Yes.
Another understanding for we can't say like this is also because he cannot be compared to any material objects which only we know, like.
Yes. Yeah, but that hasn't been said here.
Okay.
It's correct, but so far Jiva Goswami hasn't said that.
But then here also, it is partially like. Yeah. He can be said he's like this, but not completely. The same thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a different idea. There's just, you can't identify him in material terms. You can't say he's this and this. Natad idrakti geyam. That is a different idea than saying that he's infinite and therefore nobody can know everything about him. You also can't know him in any ordinary way. Those are the two things. The Supreme can't be described because no one can describe everything about him, but the other thing is no ordinary person can describe him. With ordinary intelligence, you can't describe him. So that's the second thing. Although it's inverted in different order. You know, but it's given first in the Upanishad verse, but it's the second. It's Jiva Goswami's second reason. That you can't say he's like this. That means someone with ordinary intelligence can't say he's like that.
Really? And also, here before they quoting this being like this, Jiva Goswami in translation is saying about the limit, the quantity of ecstasy. So here again, because this ecstasy is unlimited, the words cannot say he is this. So is it the continuation of the unlimited again intervened here in this? Because he's unlimited, nobody can say he's like this.
Yes. Yeah.
So then it is quoted as two different reasons why the Vedas cannot describe him. One is of unlimitedness, another is one can't explain he's like this. But it seems like both are intertwined with each other.
Okay, you know, then then we're questioning why is it two separate reasons to be so tied together.
Yeah.
I'm looking. We're doing. Oh, that was my idea in the commentary that there's actually two different reasons for him being beyond words. Ordinary words can't know anything about him. Even enlightened words can't say everything about him. Those are two different things. Those are two different ideas.
I mean,
but Jiva Goswami doesn't point that out.
No, in the beginning of the, I think, 3-4 anuchetas before, that's where he started actually. Then the translation you have said for two reasons. One is for right. unlimitedness, second
right.
is...
But it doesn't, we don't see how there are two separate reasons. They seem to be, oh. right? They seem to be the same reason.
Yeah, it seems like, but in that place we discriminated as two reasons? I think...
No, he jumped right into the discussion of unlimitedness and didn't deal yeah. with the second reason.
Yeah.
Not yet. He seems to be getting around to it now, but he hasn't really shown how it's a separate reason.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, that's
we still have two more paragraphs.
Okay.
Maybe he'll finally get to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, okay.
Why don't we get to the end of this and then decide whether we have a problem.
Okay.
I think it's 35 and 36 is the end. No, 37, 38, 39. We have four more paragraphs. Let's see if anything comes up in those paragraphs.
Okay, thank you.
We have this unsettled question, how are there really two different ways in which he's unknowable? But we do know from elsewhere, from Jiva Goswami, that Yato Vacho Nivartante, which he quotes here, is understood in those two ways. That some people can't know anything about him, and even those who can know can't know everything about him. Yes.
I think this is Jiva Goswami. I'm reading 97.32. He himself gives. Yeah, this 32. He gives. Two reasons. Anantiena и Дамитхам, that iti nirdesha
самбхавенача. But that's all he says. You know, all he says about the second reason is idam itam tadnirdesha samphavena. It's impossible to say he's like that. But he doesn't say that means that a material person can't say anything about him. You know, he doesn't spell it out. He doesn't further explain that. That's our problem. We don't see a full explanation of what that second reason is supposed to be.
I think it's coming next in Nishiketas. I remember this discussion.
Where?
Neti.
Later on. Good. Okay, let's keep on going then.
And one small question. Does it mean that, for example, when we describe Krishna, that his touch is like those of tamal tree leaves, and then his body is very soft, like a butter, and so on.
Yes.
Does it mean that all this discussion, the description of Krishna's descriptions, are false, or he's really like this, but he is much more.
Yeah, no, it's not false, but he's not a tree. His color may be like a tree, but it doesn't make him literally a tree. So he's something beyond that we haven't pinned down.
Like, for example,
you could say so many things about Krishna, but you haven't said, you haven't defined him completely, no matter what you say.
Because when we say that his touch is like a, his body is very soft, or his touch is like when we touch the tamal tree's leaves, so it's very pleasant, very soft sensation, but we can understand that this is only a material sensation, and when we touch Krishna, it will be even more deeper, even more intense. In this sense.
And if you know that, you know that Krishna feels like, his touch feels like a tamal tree's leaves. Well, you haven't experienced it, you just know it theoretically. You may have touched such leaves and get an idea, but until you actually touch Krishna, you don't really know. You just have some idea. Otherwise, just get a tamal tree and you know, embrace the tree. You should be satisfied with that. What do you need Krishna for? Yat tu satyam gyanam ityadau surupasya saksharev nirdesha. When we hear from Shruti direct descriptions of his identity, we do. Shrutis do say such things as Brahman is real existence and consciousness. That seems to be a direct description of the nature of Brahman. Well, and Swabhaviki Jnana Bala Kriyacha Ityaudau Gunasya Tushruyate. And we also hear direct descriptions of his qualities. In such Shruti statements as, he has autonomous energies of consciousness, power, and activity. That's a very specific statement about his qualities. Well, what's going on then? Tatra cha tataiva. That is also the same situation. They are saying true things about them. They're not only figurative. They're not exaggeration or mythology or poetic imagination. They're literal truth. But they don't say everything about him and his qualities. They're just a partial description. Same situation. And the Shrutis say that. Tataiva ityahu. In the last verse of the prayer of personified Vedas. Atanni rasanena bhavan nidana. Because they conclude in you after denying all things that are material. Oh, I'm sorry. The words. The Shrutis say in the words. Atanni rasanena bhavan nidana. Which means, because they conclude in you after denying all things that are material. They say a lot of things about what Krishna isn't. The Vedas. Neti, 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 neti. Then they say some things about what he is. And that's all they can do. Then they just have to stop. They can't go any further. Then the Bhagavatam comes in. And, you know, the books of the Goswamis, they say more about Krishna. But still, even that's still only limited sample. Okay. Atanni rasanena bhavan nidana. The Shrutis negate all the things he isn't, and then they finally take shelter in you. Atat prakritam yad vastu tanni rasyaiva bhavat paryavasanat. This indicates that whatever material knowledge and so on is indicated. No, I'm sorry. I already said this. This means that because they conclude in you after denying all things that are material. Ayam artaha, budhir, gyanam, asam moham, ityadina, kriir, dir, bir, etat, sarvam, mana eva, ityadina cha, chayat prakritam gyanadikam, abhidiyate. Tat sarvam brahma nabhavatiti, neti, neti, ityadina, natasya karyam, karanam cha vijyate. Iti ityadi na cha nishidyate. So here is how the Vedas do the negating. This indicates that whatever material knowledge and so on is indicated by such statements as intelligence, knowledge, and freedom from bewilderment, that's Bhagavad Gita, and humility, intelligence, fear, all this is the mind only, that's from Upanishads. All of this is not Brahman. Which denial is made by such words as not this, not this. So the Vedas do mention many material things and then say this is not the absolute. And the Shvetashvata Upanishad says he has no duty and no instruments of activity. He's not an ordinary person. He doesn't have material senses in mind. He doesn't need any tools to do his work. Instruments. But still he has his energies who do so many things. Ata cha satya gyana nadi vakyena swabhaviki gyana balakriya cha ityadi vakyena cha tadabhidiyate. I have here a translation, and so the same is indicated by statements about real existence and consciousness. No, not the same. First of all, I made a mistake here in the translation. The Vedas negate, mention all material things and then negate. No, they're not the Supreme. And then they say some things about the Supreme. So it's not saying the same. The second element, that he does have real identity and qualities, that is indicated by some other statements, like real existence and consciousness. Real existence and consciousness.
Yeah.
I don't see it. Oh, Satya Gyan Adi Vakina. Satyam Gyanam Anantam Brahma. That statement. But Jiva Goswami just calls it the Satya Gyan Adi Vakya, the statement about Satya and Gyanam. That's saying something real about the identity of the Supreme. Brahman is eternal consciousness, unlimited. That's a statement about his identity. It is saying something about him, and then there's other statement that says about his qualities. He has autonomous energies of knowledge, force, and activity. So Abhavaki Gyana Bala Kriyacha. So that's the second element of after negating the material things that are not him, something positive about him is said in the Vedas. Tasmat prakritad anyadeva tajnanadi iti tesham gyan adi shabdanam atannirasaneva twayi pariyavasanam iti. Consequently, his awareness and other assets, his consciousness and his other opulences, are different from what that which is material. And so the Shruti's words, Gyana and so on, Satyam Gyanam Anantam Brahma and so on, all those words, statements of the Shruti's, they conclude in you by refuting what is not him. Okay, we are out of time, so I think we'll have to continue tomorrow. Before we read the commentary, there's one or two quick questions. No, okay, so we're just going to stop and read the commentary. Tomorrow is Thursday, I'm not going to be here. When I come back on Sunday, we'll read it. I'll read it, but we won't have time for questions. Okay, commentary. The Shrutis describe the Supreme as undescribable, but the fact remains that they are describing him. The Taittiriya Upanishad defines Brahman as Satyam Gyanam Anantam, and the Shvetashvata Upanishad defines him, his qualities, as Swabhaviki, autonomous, or in other words, empowered to act on his behalf, but not independent from him. And that Shvetashvata Upanishad names three categories of these integral Shaktis. Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate natatsamascha vyadikas cha drishyate parasya shaktir vividaiva shruyate swabhaviki gyana balat priyacha. He is not obliged to work and has no material senses to carry out work. No one can be found equal to him or greater. And as we hear from scripture, his own spiritual energy has her manifold aspects, knowledge, power, and movement that act autonomously. These energies of Gyana, Bala, and Kriya are different from the limited energies of material creation, which originate in the Supreme, but expand from him as separate and inferior. The Supreme says this himself, which is the other statement quoted here from the Gita. Buddhir gyanama sammoha shama satyam damak shamaha sukam dukam bhavo bhavo bayam cha bayam eva cha ahimsa samata tushtiks tapo danam yasho yashahat bhavanti bhava bhutanam matta eva pritam vidaha. Intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, control of the mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, nonviolence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame, and infamy, all these various qualities of living beings are created by me alone. That's the material qualities. In the Gita, Krishna says, there are all these material opulences, they all come from me alone. Elsewhere, it's denied that he is any such, that he's anything material himself. And his own qualities are not material. But those qualities are mentioned and then negated. In the Gita, also in the Shrutis. Okay, we're going to have to stop. And we're getting near the end of this Anuchet. We'll continue on Sunday. Hare Krishna.